Where Earth Meets Sky. Written by Annie Murray. Read by Annie Aldington. Throughout its history, the car has been a liberator, an agent of freedom. Throughout its history, the car has enabled people to break out of their constraints, to attempt something they could never previously do, to venture somewhere they could never previously go, to support ideas and trends they could never previously endorse. L.J.K. Setwright. Chapter 1. Birmingham, 1905.
Don't cry over me, Lily, my dear girl. I've had such a very good life. You mustn't grieve.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Chapel. I can't help it, Lily sobbed,
as she sat beside the dying woman whose motherly kindness she had known during these past precious years.
You've been so very good to me.
She had waited all evening, in an agony of pent-up emotion, for Mrs. Chapel's jealous son, Horace, to allow her to pay her last respects to the woman she loved so much.
You've been like a daughter. You know that.
Mrs. Chapel's rasping whisper came to her. The lids flickered over her blue eyes. She was fading fast. Lily sat in the candlelight beside the big comfortable bed with its silk drapes. She clung desperately to the shrunken hand of this woman, into whose household she had arrived as a scullery maid when she was 13. In her own grief and loss, Maud Chapel had, over the years, grown to depend on Lily as a companion. Mrs. Chapel's body had fast become frail with her illness. She did not look any more like the comforting figure who had dressed in pretty floating clothes, who adored small children, beaming at them with her beautiful, loving eyes. The light of her life was failing, and her sons were in the house, waiting. Lily told herself that they were full of pain at losing their mother, that it was their sorrow that made them so harsh, especially Horace, the older brother. They had kept her out of the room all evening, only reluctantly letting her in now it was so late.
"Mother's asking for you," Horace had said, stiff with resentment. "You'd better go up."
Now she was here, she sat in dread of them coming in to tell her to go again.
"Oh, Mrs. Chapel," she whispered,
looking down at the ravaged face, her own tears flowing again. She felt her heart was being torn in two.
"What's going to become of me without you?"
Mrs. Chapel was a year off her 70th birthday, and until her illness had looked younger than her years, with her soft, glowing complexion and cheerful ways. But she was much changed now, months of sickness taking their toll. She lay with her arms straight, outside the covers, her soft brown hair, which had so fast turned grey, brushed back from her face. She seemed to have slipped far away into sleep, so that Lily thought she might never wake again. But as if a sign had been given, just as the grandfather clock down in the hall was striking 11 with its gentle bong, the elderly lady opened her eyes, seeming quite alert, and tried to get up.
"Lily?" "Yes, dear Mrs. Chapel."
Hope surged through her. Perhaps Mrs. Chapel was not dying. She seemed so bright suddenly, as if she might sit up and take some broth.
"I'm still at home, then?"
"Yes, you are. You're in your own bed."
"Bring me the picture, please, my dear. Of my Naomi."
"It's here, right beside you."
She lifted the silver-framed photograph from its position on the bedside table and turned it so that Mrs. Chapel could see the face of her dead daughter. Naomi, a dark-eyed beauty, had died of a cruel brain fever when she was only 17. It was the last portrait taken of her, her shoulders wrapped in a lace shawl, and the young face, never now to age, smiling radiantly from behind the glass as it had for over 20 years. Mrs. Chapel reached out as if to embrace the portrait, a gentle smile on her lips.